Hello, and welcome to episode 115 of Public Interest Podcast with your host, Jordan Cooper, where we interview politicians, activists, advocates, and others who seek to improve the state of the world. We're here today with Len Lazarick, editor and publisher of MarylandReporter.com. Len, how are you doing today?
I'm doing okay. I'm actually a little tired. I just finished up a project that I'm working on about Colombia's 50th birthday.
Interesting. Well, let's get started with the interview. Maybe we can come back to that. The first question I'd like to ask you is, what are you currently doing or what have you ever done to advance the public interest and why?
Well, let's start with what I just mentioned. I've lived in Colombia for 43 years. It's going to be 50 years old in June.
Mm-hmm.
I've had in mind to do a book project for some number of years, and last January, a year ago, mm-hmm. I realized I hadn't done anything about it. And the 50th birthday is coming up in June.
Mm-hmm.
And so I decided to try to find some kind of, to find a way to do this project over the next year and come out with a book in June. So I came up with an outline about various topics in Colombia. I pitched it to my friends at the Business Monthly, a newspaper that covers Howard County and Anne Arundel County,
mm-hmm.
where I've worked for a number of years. I do political columns for them now, but I was the news editor there. And so I'm doing this monthly series of essays. I take about 2 weeks a month for the research, and then I do about 3 days. I was just finishing up part 8, which was about religion. I've already done education and health and politics.
In Columbia, Maryland.
About Columbia, Maryland, and the whole development of the planned community.
Interesting. So you're writing a history of this town.
Well, it's not. It's called Columbia at 50, a memoir of the city. It's not quite a history.
Uh-huh.
I actually have 2 degrees in history, so I know what history is. It's more personalized and it's topical. There's certainly elements of history, and I try to cover developments over 50 years, but I would hesitate to call it history.
Well, what is it that inspired you to write a memoir of a city? What gave you that idea?
Well, in case you and other people don't know,
mm-hmm.
Colombia, despite what it looks like, was actually planned as a city with a downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened is they developed the 10 villages. So Jim Rouse and the Rouse Company developed Colombia. What happened over the years is they never really completed the downtown part of it.
Hmm.
There are 10 villages. There are about 100,000 people who live here. It's not incorporated.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea was to build a city, not just a better suburb. And that's Jim Rouse's words. So,
is it a suburb or a city now?
It's trying to be a city.
But it has effectively been a suburb for quite a bit of time.
Correct. And although it was pitched as the urban center of Howard County, and as a matter of fact it is, except it doesn't have the kind of densities that we think of as a city.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been working here. I was a long time with the Columbia Flyer and Patuxent Publishing, which started here and was the major newspaper here for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, like a lot of newspapers, it's fallen into decline. It's now owned by the Baltimore Sun Media Group. At least it's still alive, unlike the Gazette newspapers in Montgomery County.
And for our listeners who don't know what has happened to the Gazette newspapers.
They're dead. Killed.
By Jeff Bezos.
Well, yes.
Who purchased the Washington Post.
Well, whether they were profitable or not, it's clear that Bezos and the people who work for him do not really care about metro coverage, about local coverage. They're actually in quite a hiring spree. I worked for the Washington Post for 8 years on the national copy desk. And it's clear they really don't care about local coverage. There's some question whether the Gazette newspapers, which at one time were like more than 20 newspapers, mm-hmm. in small editions in Montgomery, Prince George's, they even had some things in Frederick, which closed and gradually contracted. The Post is now on a hiring spree. Supposedly they were going to hire about 60 people, but most of those were going to work on national issues. I mean, they don't have a lot of people working on the metro issues.
So if he doesn't care so much about metro issues, why would you tell him that he ought to care? What's important about metro issue coverage?
Well, I don't really much. I'm not going to change his mind, and he has moved and significantly achieved helping the Post become more of a national newspaper,
mm-hmm.
much like the New York Times, which never was a very local newspaper to begin with. I'm not saying that Jeff Bezos, who lives most of the time in Washington, should care about metro issues, because he probably doesn't. But somebody should, and Montgomery County and Prince George's County are two largest counties.
Well, what's the value that is added by local metropolitan news coverage?
Well, there just aren't people covering the kind of local issues that people care about when they walk out the front door. There is virtually no one covering the schools in Montgomery County and Prince George's County. There are some Post reporters that have that as part of their responsibilities. The police coverage, the courts coverage, the little internal politics things, the Montgomery County delegation to the State House. Now there are three reporters at Bethesda Pete, part of Bethesda Magazine,
mm-hmm.
The publisher there is actually spending some money on these experienced journalists who I know and are trying to cover politics, among other things, in Montgomery County. But that's not enough. I mean, it's a county of more than 1 million people.
So why is it important to cover the parks and the schools and the police and the courts on the one hand? On the other hand, you know, what has been the effect of the decline of the local media coverage of these issues?
But there's just a lack of accountability on how these institutions are run. We spend a lot of money on them. We want some value out of them, and we use them, as a matter of fact. You know, we use the parks, we use the schools, we use the roads.
Have the roads, schools, parks deteriorated since the decline of the newspapers that have not been able to hold them accountable, and have politicians become more corrupt as they've been held less accountable?
How would we know? And there's no reporters covering them. I mean, you drive I don't live there, but, you know, I drive on the roads sometimes. So I'm not suggesting anybody's going to improve the traffic in Montgomery County, but when there's nobody going on a regular basis covering the little local meetings, the community things that people are upset about, they're going to the school board on a regular basis, and even the county council. The county council gets some fair amount of coverage, but the council members with a staff of five, nine council members, staff of five.
That's 45.
That's
45 plus another nine to include the actual members.
So, and how many reporters are covering them? Three? Four? Something like that, maybe.
Uh-huh.
The Montgomery Sentinel still exists, but and does some of that coverage, but it's a big county, and it never had its own daily newspaper, mm-hmm. Which is part of the reasons that it gets disregarded. Plus, it was a very, as you probably know, it was a very rural, except for the part that's inside the Beltway, close to D.C., Bethesda and Chevy Chase. It was a pretty rural county until the 1960s, and has exploded since then.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying that there's no way to know. You said that with the decline of local press coverage of local political issues and local issues that aren't political, like parks and education, you'd say that there has been less ability to hold elected officials accountable and less accountability for the parks or for all the public services in general, but we're not yet able to say if that has led to deterioration of services or any negative externalities because we haven't reported.
You don't know what you don't know.
Right. So they may be just as good, or they may have deteriorated, or they may have improved, but we just don't know because no one's reporting.
But at the very least, they're not as accountable as they used to be with X number of reporters at the various Gazette editions in Montgomery County and Prince George's County.
So you're the editor and publisher of MarylandReporter.com. How did you come to be the editor and publisher of MarylandReporter.com, and what has that website really evolved into?
We started 7.5 years ago. 2009, September 2009 is when we incorporated. We're a nonprofit 501c3 designated by the IRS as a nonprofit. And we got started with foundation funding. Got started because the Baltimore Examiner went out of business. I was the State House Bureau Chief from when it started in March of 2006 to when it folded in January of 2009.
It was a three-year cycle for it.
And much of the copy I was producing was also going into the Washington Examiner, which had preceded it and continued to exist for a little while as a daily. The name the name still exists, but it's really a national political publication.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was doing some accountability journalism. And I thought it was going to be my last job in journalism, being State House Bureau Chief, essentially for these two newspapers. I worked for Baltimore. Washington picked up a lot of my stuff. Journalism is a public service, and it was really a loss as other publications have pulled back. The Gazette of Politics and Business, we were talking about the Gazette, was a fabulous institution. When I arrived back in Annapolis, I'd covered the State House many years before, but in 2006, the Gazette of Politics and Business was really a major force at the State House. They had three or four reporters. They did, a lot of interesting coverage.
Mm-hmm.
And as coverage pulled back, there was a foundation called the Franklin Center for Government and Public Integrity that was starting up news websites about state governments all across the country.
Hmm.
And I heard about them. I went to a conference. I was actually a presenter at the first conference that they did, and heard that money was available, so I applied for a grant. And I got a grant that lasted, it was actually several grants in a row that lasted for about 3 years. Then they decided to eliminate all the grants to independent organizations. They still have a number of news websites that they run themselves out mm-hmm. of Alexandria at state houses. So that's how Maryland Reporter got started, just to cover state government and and politics.
So it really evolved as a replacement of your previous job as State House Bureau Chief for the Baltimore and essentially Washington Examiners. And because that newspaper, which had a very short lifespan, folded, you were basically, you recreated the same organization with yourself.
Well,
at the lead.
I didn't recreate it. No, we had a somewhat different focus, but actually, it was a way for me to continue doing journalism about state government and politics. The foundation funding has dried up a bit, although we just had a very successful matching grant with the Knight Foundation, which has long supported various kinds of journalism. They grew out of the Knight newspaper group. And so this year we actually have a lot more money than we had last year and the year before. So while I'm working on this Columbia project that we discussed earlier, I have a reporter in Annapolis, Dan Menifee, and I'll be there several days a week when I can pull myself away. I'm trying to figure out how to juggle this book project and cover the State House.
Well, Len, I think there's a question that maybe some of our listeners might be thinking, which is, we've all heard of Hearst and Pulitzer. We know about Time Magazine. We know about a lot of these different major institutions that have been quite lucrative, and in fact, their owners have been quite wealthy because of owning these media things. You think of Rupert Murdoch, you think of the Wall Street Journal, you think of so many different really wealthy people who own media outlets, Jeff Bezos now, and you think, wow, you know, media actually in the past has been quite profitable. But now you're saying that at least the coverage of local news and of political news on the state level is something that has led to the organization that have been doing it, they've folded, so that one might conclude that, well, in fact, that kind of coverage is not lucrative, okay? And then the question is, well, if it is a public service and it is needed, why is it not lucrative? Why are people not demanding this kind of service be provided? And then if they did provide it, why wouldn't advertisers invest and then make this, you know, profitable?
Some of the names that you mentioned are, you know, from a century ago. Pulitzer, Hearst, Jeff Bezos didn't make his money out of newspapers. He put his money into the Washington Post and didn't pay an awful lot of money for it. I can't remember the exact...
Around $350 million.
Some years before that, the Wall Street Journal paid more than New York Times paid more than $1 billion for the Boston Globe. Newspapers, it happened that in my career, I was part of the heyday of newspapers. They really became tremendously profitable in the 1960s, and then the 70s and 80s were really the heyday. They were expanding staff. There was a lot of advertising. And then things started to change in the 90s. The economy changed, and then the internet hit. And the internet has taken away the advertising sources that were from classifieds, job ads, real estate ads, all those kind of things that you could put all together on one page, and you didn't have any put any content on them, and then all the other things that happened on the internet, and then that was happening and causing significant decline in profits, and these news organizations have not yet found a way to make the internet really profitable for them.
Yet your MarylandReporter.com is exclusively internet-based with no paper distribution.
There were times in the past where anybody can pick up our content. Part of the deal with the foundation where we got started is our content is free, And, for instance, the Daily Record in Baltimore and other newspapers have picked up our content in the past, and other websites use our content.
And the Daily Record in Annapolis, too, right?
No, there's the...
Oh, just the Baltimore.
The Capital newspaper. Yeah, as a matter of fact, the Capital did pick up some stuff, but the... See, people never paid for their news. They thought they paid. They bought a newspaper. You had a subscription to the Washington Post. Your subscription to the Washington Post largely paid to have the Washington Post printed and delivered to you. That's what that money went toward. The content, the journalism, was supported by the advertising. That's essentially how the economic model worked.
So the subscription was the actual materials and logistics, and it was the advertising that paid for creating the news content.
Correct. That's essentially the model. So when you lose the advertising, you lose the money that's being paid for the content.
You could take blank papers and get them to people's houses in the morning with no content on it.
And the other problem with newspaper advertising as opposed to internet advertising, because we run we run some advertising, but it's not a major source of income. But on the internet, you can actually count the number of people who see it. You can count the number of people who act on it. With a newspaper or magazine, you can't really count those. You can estimate them, you can do surveys about them, but you can't count them like day by day. How many people saw that tire ad? How many people saw that car ad?
So has this become a better world in which to become an advertiser? You can get more bang for your buck if you're trying to sell a tire?
Well, we're in a transitional
state. Who wins here? Clearly journalism is losing.
Google, Yahoo. I mean, I
so they win at the expense of journalism. Too complicated.
You're trying to put words in my mouth, but I'm not going to say that. But who is winning in the current environment? I really wish I were not as dependent on Google as I am.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I started using it as a search engine, mm-hmm. but now I use it. I use Google Docs as an editing tool. That's the way we share our copy.
Yeah.
I get advertising from Google AdSense.
Yeah.
I use an application called Google DoubleClick for Publishers, which is how I place ads on my page.
Mm-hmm.
Even though my email is len@marylandreporter.com, it's actually a Gmail account. Google has come to dominate things. Yahoo has kind of struggled. I can't think of the others on the internet. But, Bezos made his money by being a disruptive technology to retailing.
Mm-hmm.
And this owning the Washington Post is kind of a sidelight. I hope he enjoys it. I hope he continues to put money into the Post. The fact that he doesn't have a lot of interest in local coverage is disappointing. But perhaps he's not as public service minded. I'm not sure William Randolph Hearst or Joseph Pulitzer cared all that much about local advertising. But when they were getting their newspaper starters, newspapers were your basic mass medium for people. I mean, they got started before radio, which wasn't big until the 1920s. They got started before TV, which didn't really start to get big until the 1950s.
So as we approach the end of this podcast, I'd like to ask you a final question, which is to reflect upon your years as a journalist and as creating content as a public service, and just take a moment to speak to our listeners about why you've done it. Why is it important to have journalists really trying to advance the public interest for everyone's good?
Well, because because information is important in a democracy. If you don't know, you know, facts are important. Not alternative facts, real facts. What actually happened? People often ask me, well, who's going to win the election, or what's going to happen about such and so? And you know, journalism tries to be a bit predictive, but what I say to people is, I have a hard enough time determining the facts of what really happened at an event. How many people actually attended the inauguration? Mm-hmm. Not what you think they attended, but actually counting them. How many people took the metro that day? Mm-hmm. How did the ratings actually care? It comes down to numbers. How is our money spent? And so that's why journalism, knowing about, especially community journalism, which I did for more than 20 years, is a way a community talks to itself, remembers itself, understands itself. And without that community journalism, without you and your neighbors picking up a newspaper or going to a website. I mean, Patch tried this with a not very good business model, but Patch tried to do this on a community level. And without that level of attention, we really just become, you know, disconnected from one another, disconnected from the institutions that serve us.
So that has been Len Lazarick, editor and publisher of MarylandReporter.com, who speaks about his public service through journalism as a means of fostering community, presenting real facts that, yes, does hold power accountable and does enable us to perpetuate a strong democracy, but really it goes beyond governance and politics to the core fabrics of the very communities in which we're a part, and that by fostering public dialogue and providing a basis of universally accepted facts that have been verified upon which you could build any future discussion, that, for Len, has been a public service, and that is what journalism is all about. So, Len, thank you so much for joining us today.
Good to be here.
And that has been episode 115 of Public Interest Podcast with your host, Jordan Cooper, where we interview politicians, activists, advocates, and others who seek to improve the state of the world. Remember to listen to us at publicinterestpodcast.com on iTunes or your podcast app on Apple products. And should you wish to talk to Len, you can always leave him a voicemail. The phone number is on the Contact Us tab of the website. Thanks so much for joining us, and we will talk to you next time.